I want to live in a world where gender isn't a deciding factor in opportunity. Hey, it's Vanessa Paisani, and you're listening to Amplified, the show where we're changing the stories we tell ourselves about women, and as a consequence, about men too. Because remarkable women aren't a supply problem. There's just so many of them out there, and I believe we need to hear from them. So that's where I come in. We'll also be chatting with some men about the topic as well, because we want to hear their stories on this too, especially why this topic is more important than ever. And to you, thanks for joining us each week for great conversations with remarkable folks and believing that remarkable women aren't a supply problem.
Hey, and thanks so much for joining us for episode 2 of Amplified. This time we have the great pleasure of talking with Sage Franck, or Sage French, and you'll hear a little bit about us chatting about the pronunciation of our family names at the beginning of the episode, which I chose to leave in because I really appreciated that part of our conversation. And Sage is the co-founder and chief technical officer of a business called Crescendo, and they're changing workplaces by helping people become more aware of their unconscious bias. So they're helping to create inclusive workplaces. And this interview, this conversation has some real gems in it. Everything from you don't really see unconscious bias until you face it firsthand, and really how gender affects your ability to move freely in the world. And I really like how those things were framed. And it's a wide-ranging conversation about gender and work and how it impacts us and whether or not we should talk about it. I hope you enjoy it. And I really look forward to hearing from you.
Do you pronounce your name Sage French?
Yep.
Okay, great.
The American pronunciation is right.
The American. What language would you normally speak?
The last name is Italian.
So it's, mine too.
It's technically Franck. Yeah, I can tell yours is for sure. Franck is not like a typical, you know, Southern Italian sounding name. It's actually from right up in the north. So it's traditionally a German or Austrian name, Frank. And then when they moved it down, when they moved our family down to Italy, they converted it because there's no K in Italian. So it just went to Franck.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like as our family migrated down south, you can see it go from Franck to Franchini to Franchetti. And like it goes through all of the evolutions through the regions. It's so cute.
Actually, well, first I'll start by saying thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm happy to support and be part of this.
I met Stefan. I guess I didn't meet him in person, but we were supposed to meet at Startup Fest, and I was coming in on a bus from New Brunswick, which ended up being very delayed by traffic.
I missed
our meeting, but we did speak on the phone, and we were talking a bit about your work at Crescendo, which I think is amazing. And I was wondering if you could start off by telling us a bit about how you folks decided to found this and a bit about unconscious bias and why you think it's important right now.
Yeah, so a few months ago, well, about 9 months ago, three of us met and we were talking about problems that we could solve. We all had a passion for making the world a better place and more inclusive. And at the time, we were sort of just coming out of the bulk of the Me Too movement. So that was all top of mind for us. And we started talking about how we could solve for sexual harassment in the workplace. And so that's really where Crescendo started out. It was initially intended to be a solution for people who face sexual harassment and who can't speak up to HR for fear of retaliation. But over the next 7 months or so, we did a ton of research. We really went the startup route. And we talked to over 100 people who had faced it themselves, faced discrimination at work, been on the HR side of discrimination reports, and just really tried to get a deep dive into the whole picture of it. And what we found was that, yes, sexual harassment and even it brought them to, like, full-on racism and other areas of discrimination, it's a big problem, but it actually starts months and months earlier when poor behavior and unconscious bias is normalized, and it sort of trickles down through the culture of a company and builds up into this culture where things like sexual harassment and racism are accepted or are not, you know, discouraged. What we ended up shifting or pivoting to is this solution that we're on now, which is an AI tool for diversity and inclusion training that's based in the side of a company's workplace communication systems like Slack. So unconscious bias is really the bias that we don't know that we have. You know, things that we say to one another that we don't know are offensive, and because there's no good avenue for us to get that feedback, we will never find out that the things that we're saying to other people are actually harming them. So Crescendo's purpose is to identify those unconscious biases in the things that we say to each other at work and help us to figure out what we're saying that isn't landing well, why it's not landing well, and empathize with those people who are receiving the comments to see it from their perspective and then learn how to be better to one another and more inclusive.
Yeah, so really a tool to help, I guess, shift workplace culture. Would you agree?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And can you tell us maybe a bit about, like, really intriguing on the artificial intelligence or AI side of it. And in some ways, it sounds like you're analyzing language and how we speak to one another, whether, I mean, verbally is one thing, but also in written text. And how does that all work in terms of providing people feedback?
The AI portion of what we're doing, it's my most exciting part of our business, for sure. Like, I'm on the technical side of what we're doing, and it's a big, hairy beast, but it's a very exciting opportunity for AI because AI can take into account millions of perspectives. The reason that nobody has, like, a one-stop shop for unconscious bias training right now is bias is such a hard thing for people to detect. You know, we all have our own biases about what is biased and what isn't biased, and it just complicates things so much. So by using AI, what we're doing is we are processing language, we are processing context as well, so not just what you say, but who you are and who the person who you're saying it to is, and what your historical relationship is together. And we process all of that together to determine whether something is biased or not. But because we're using AI, we really take it away from that single person's perspective, and the data set that we're using is trained from thousands of people's perspectives from around the world so that we can really get a diverse set of perspectives, a diverse set of labels about what is and isn't biased.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's a very exciting problem from a technical lens, too, because, you know, no one's done this before, but AI-wise, like, all the tools are there, and we're using elements of research that we've seen other people apply to different problems, like natural language processing with neural nets, for example. You know, that's been done for other situations, but not yet for unconscious bias.
So one of the things I'm in the process of exploring is really gender bias, which of course is only one bias and sometimes unconscious and sometimes not. You work in technology, and of course we hear a lot about there seems to be a gender imbalance in technology. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you found that to be true, and if you see any, if yes, maybe you could tell us a bit about that, and if not, maybe a bit about that perspective too.
Absolutely. There definitely is still a gender imbalance. And the tricky thing about that is you don't really see it unless you've faced it yourself or unless you've heard a story firsthand. You know, I still meet people who are very much allies and very much, you know, supportive of women in tech, but they still are surprised when I tell them some of the things that I and my friends have faced. Like, I'll give you an example. Recently, I was at a tech event, and somebody added me on LinkedIn and right there at the event. And he looked at my photo and he said, "Why did you use that picture? You're so much more attractive in person." And that's a small example of the kind of gender bias. You'd never say that to, you know, somebody who isn't immediately supposed to be judged based on their looks, based on, you know, societal norms. And it's just, it was mind-blowing to me. I'm like, wow, we just had an hour-long good business conversation and that's how we're going to end it. And this is the kind of thing that happens again and again. And I really started to face it when I was still in university in my first internship. Up until that point, I hadn't really seen it. Like, I'd seen my classmates leave the classes because of bias, but I didn't really see it myself. And I'm not sure why I didn't face it directly till this point. But there was 1 week during my first internship where it was just rapid fire sexism again and again and again. I was told I was too pretty to code and that I couldn't code because I was wearing a dress. And that has anything to do with it, right?
Yeah.
And then I went to a store to buy a new laptop, and the guy showed me this, like, beautiful little sparkly miniature laptop. And I told him I needed something with more power, and he looked me dead in the eye and said, "No, you don't."
Wow.
I said, "Yes, I do. I'm building apps on this." He goes, "Yeah, but not big apps, not anything serious."
Wow.
And it's pervasive. These are sort of lighthearted examples, but it gets so much worse. And when you really start to get to know people on a deeper level and have them open up about the things that they face, it's really bad. It is really, really bad.
Wow. Yeah. I'm sorry I had to go through those things. I think you're right, though. We have all had experiences like that where you just kind of blink and you're like, what am I supposed to say right now?
Yeah. It's surprising what people still feel comfortable saying to other people, you know, and stereotyping plays a big role in that, but also just how widely accepted that type of behavior is. You know, nobody else said anything to him, so it was on me to educate him why that wasn't an appropriate thing to say. And that's a problem with bias, you know, across other types of bias and discrimination as well. Like, the expectation is constantly on the marginalized individual to educate the masses. And that gets exhausting. And then, you know, at a certain point, you lose the energy for that.
Is there a way to move past that? I mean, I think you're working in a space where it sounds like part of what you can change is the culture at work, which I think is super important because it's a place where we spend so much time. And it's a place where it's important for not only the marginalized individual to speak up, but really everybody to be aware so that we all have responsibility in changing the culture. But how do you think we do that on, like, a broader scale? You mentioned Me Too, and I think that's been kind of a watershed moment. How do you think we keep that going? And how does technology maybe play into that?
I think technology plays a big role, especially social media. Because for the first time in history, you know, this is not a new problem. Like, we've been facing this for the entire history of the human race.
yeah.
So I think now we're really starting to see these conversations pop up a lot more because of technology. You know, we can find our like-minded people. We can speak our minds in a much freer way and have people who relate to that because of the ubiquity of the internet and the availability of just online profiles where people are voicing their own opinions and views. Like, in the past, it was impossible for somebody to find some people like them, you know, if they live in an area or grow up in an area where they're not allowed to talk about it and they are a marginalized person. You know, the internet has brought us so much connection, and that's why when we see things like Me Too and other movements coming out, you see them to be global movements. You know, they're not localized to a specific area. And I think that's the first step in changing the entire world when it comes to this type of discrimination. I think AI plays a role in it as well, because what we're doing at Crescendo is we're trying to make it a safe, sort of a personal experience to learn about other people without having to do all the guesswork yourself and without having to put yourself into vulnerable situations where you're constantly asking the wrong question. I think a lot of people who want to be allies don't know where to start, and so they don't start at all. But the reason they're not starting is they feel like they're not welcome to be part of these conversations about gender and about race. So what we're doing with the AI component is we're trying to make it a safe space for them to explore the earlier stages of that and then, you know, move them down that funnel of allyship until they become a true ally and advocate for equality.
Yeah, and I think that's so important because I've talked to a lot of people that would agree. It's like, I want to be an ally, but it's really difficult to talk about. And I feel like when I say my opinion or I'm just trying to explore it, it makes it really difficult. It's like, how do we create that space for people to at least try it out and have that open-mindedness, the beginning of it, be received with more open-mindedness. It's like, how do we all move towards recognizing that we all have bias and that we're always going to have bias, but at least we can maybe see it more clearly.
Yeah. And you know what else I think would help? You see stories about high-level executives or people in companies getting fired because of sexual misconduct, for example. But we never see what happens after. So all we hear is this, you know, sudden flare-up story of this person did and said horrible things, and now they're gone. But we don't hear how removing that person and their behavior has positively impacted the workplace afterwards. So with, you know, Netflix, Uber, these big companies who are showing us that they prioritize the well-being of their workplace and their employees, they should really be continuing that story and showing us, hey, this is what we did to solve the problem. This is what the update to that problem is. Because what that shows is, you know, you can take a drastic step like that as a company leader. And your company culture not only will continue to be okay, but it'll actually improve. And we need those tangible stories of like, oh, yes, this happened at this successful workplace, and they're better because of it. So I can implement that now at my smaller, maybe more volatile workplace. It's like representation at a company level of how to take action and succeed through it.
Yeah, I love that. And I think I listened to an interview with Bozema St. John, who was at Uber.
Oh, she's amazing.
Yeah, and I think I was just noticing that she's taken a different position, but she's definitely spoken out a lot about that. And I think, to your point, has spent a lot of time working on making sure that type of thing doesn't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I agree. It's important to hear those positive stories. Just out of curiosity, like in thinking about gender, when did you first become aware of gender as a thing that would impact your life or other people's lives?
That's a very interesting question. I can't point to a single point in my life when I noticed gender for the first time. I think it was a sort of a gradual realization of this is an aspect of me that actually plays a much more important role in other people's perception of me than I thought it did. And it's not only other people's perception, but like your ability to move freely in the world in a way, you know, like your access to jobs and your access to things just that make up life. So I don't know, there were a few inflection points for me. And if I look back into my childhood, the first one that I remember is when I became the drummer in my middle school rock band.
Amazing.
So, I was suddenly really cool. And it wasn't because I was a drummer, but it was because I was the girl who is the drummer. And that to me was a little bit weird. I was thinking, why? I'm like, I think that this is cool because we're in a rock band and this is a fun thing to do and like we're making music. But no, people were more interested in the fact that I was a female drummer. Like, why does my gender have an impact on my drumming ability?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Just like, why does my dress impact my coding?
Exactly. And it's the same thing again and again. You see it in science all the time. Like, I have friends who work in labs who are doing their PhDs, and they get things like, oh, you know, you have a pink pin on your lab coat. Like, you must not be serious about your job, or like, when are you going to have a baby? Like, this is what the subtext is for all of this. You know, it's just wild to think we always have to consider this when making decisions about our lives, the way we dress, the way we choose to display ourselves to the world. I guess after the drumming thing, you know, going into high school, I actually went to an all-girls high school after being in co-ed education up until grade 8. And at that point, I really started to see how much more I could thrive when I wasn't in an environment with other genders. So I wasn't being compared to the boys anymore, and that really allowed me to excel in the math and the sciences. And I saw it a lot in my other peers as well, because we didn't have to fight against, oh, that's a boys subject, or oh, that's a boys sport, or oh, that's too rough or too hard or too whatever for you to do. And it was all just us against, not against, actually. It was very collaborative. So I felt like the competition went away when I went to an all-girls school. And I think going into university after that was a huge shock for me because I went to I went to Dalhousie actually in Halifax for computer science, and I was suddenly no longer in a group of amazing young women. I was now in a group of maybe five women in a class of 120. So it was a big difference. And then, you know, everything happened with the being too pretty to code and all that. And I don't know. So it wasn't like I ever became aware of gender. It was just a slow coming to terms with how much it meant to other people.
There's a lot of interesting stuff in there. And it's interesting that removing that competition almost allowed you to excel and compete at a higher level. Can you tell us maybe a bit about what that meant for you? Like, because it sounds like it immediately after that changed again. And so it's like, how did those outside stories really influence what you're able to achieve or how much you feel like you have to fight to be able to achieve what you're going to achieve?
Yeah, I attribute a lot of my early career success to my time at that school. It's Bishop Strawn School in Toronto. They really foster an environment of success, and they don't talk about gender. And
amazing.
It's never like, look at these incredible girls who are doing things that girls don't normally do. It's just now we have a VR class or we've got a 3D printer, or these are just things that you do. And you have access to anything you want to try, and there's no pressure to go into one thing or another. I think back in middle school, I went to a co-ed science and business school. And I think that was a good environment because the focus was on the topic. So it was expected that we were going to be doing science and we were going to be doing business, regardless of our genders. But my friends who didn't go to those schools, they defaulted into things that were traditionally more gender oriented. And I have some friends that I grew up with who they're very intelligent. They're very good at math and logic, and they would have loved to go into computer science, but they didn't have the opportunity because they didn't feel comfortable in the math courses that would have led them to be able to take computer science. And a lot of that comes back to, well, like my girlfriends weren't doing it, and it seemed like it was just for the guys, and I didn't really want to take it back early in school. And, you know, everybody talks about, like, we have to do STEM education younger and get girls into STEM and girls interested in STEM and whatnot. It does start very early. But that representation of just seeing your peers succeed in subjects that you're interested in, it plays a huge role in whether or not you're going to feel comfortable doing those things. So simply being in an environment without men allowed us to see a lot more representation of women doing things in science, tech, engineering, math, sports, everything, politics, government, you know. We did everything, and so our representation was each other, and that lifted the whole community up.
It's amazing. Ah, goosebumps. One of the questions I've been thinking a lot about is, like, how do we move to a time where gender doesn't matter in opportunities? And I think I heard you say, in some ways, it's really about not talking about it. It's kind of like, okay, well, it doesn't matter that you're a man or a woman or you know, whether your sexual orientation or race or whatever it is, like skin color, it doesn't actually matter. It's just about human potential. And I've heard this from a few other people, too. Would you say that, like, it kind of sounds accurate, but, like, I feel like that's so hard to do because it's just so ingrained in the way that we talk to each other, which kind of goes back to this whole, like, language and unconscious bias. And I'm just really, like, having a lot of swirling thoughts about that.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts?
I have a lot of swirling thoughts about it, too. It's one of those topics where you kind of just go in circles a bit when you really start to get into the details of it. But I think in an ideal world, we wouldn't have to talk about the things that make us different. But we are far from that ideal world. So we have to talk about it. And we have to talk about it because we need representation, because we need people to be able to see those parts that make themselves different in other people who are succeeding. So I think that we can eventually get to a time where these things don't matter in terms of defining somebody's value or their pay or their worth in a company. But until we have equal representation, diverse representation of everybody, all genders, all races, you know, all physical and mental abilities, there's so many intersections of this. Until we have representation of everybody at every level of our companies, our schools, our governments, we can't stop talking about it. Because if we stop talking about it now, we're just going to default to what we had before. And now more than ever, you know, we're discovering more elements of humanity that we haven't talked about in the past. Like the fact that there are more than two genders. It's not binary anymore. And that's not something that everybody has fully embraced yet. So we can't stop talking about it until we all get into this next phase of understanding all the beautiful parts of humanity. So not taking it as a negative that we are different. You know, I think a lot of people feel threatened because if you don't understand something about somebody or it's a new concept, the easier thing is to default and say, no, that's not right, or that's not the way it is. But the better thing to do is to engage and to ask questions. And if they're willing to put the energy in to help you get there, you know, putting in the work together to understand where that person is coming from and what makes their perspective something that can actually add strength to your team or your relationship or whatever your dynamic is.
So it sounds like, you know, you've spent a lot of time thinking about this over the last 9 months since Me Too, and, you know, since you got together in a team and then it led to a startup. What do you think your deepest learning from this past year has been, and how do you think you're applying it? And maybe we've already talked about that in some way, because it sounds like you're applying it in a lot of ways, but I'd be curious to hear your specific thoughts on that.
To answer this question, I'll give you a bit of background on what's actually happened to me in the last year, because my entire life has changed. It feels like every element of my life that I, or every bucket that I used to use to define my life has completely flipped upside down. 1 year ago, I was working at Microsoft. I was a technical evangelist. I was doing external facing engineering. So we'd go into companies with Microsoft technology and help them build proofs of concept on like the latest, either most recently released or soon to be released technologies. And so I was working sort of with startups, but from a Microsoft lens, and I was working on blockchain and teaching a lot. So I was, you know, big corporate stage. I wasn't startup stage. I was also living in Brampton. I was living in a different city, and I was working from home all the time. And, you know, it was fairly isolating because I'm kind of a lone wolf when it comes to, like, that type of work. And I was writing a lot on my blog. I was working on a book. So it was kind of like this little incubated little workspace. November came, and I met the guys, and we started this company. I went full-time on it in January, left my job at Microsoft, left my long-term relationship at the time, too, and then the next few months worked remotely with them. And in April, actually, my mother passed away from cancer, so
that was a huge
change. Thank you. Yeah, it's been a huge change, a huge adjustment. You know, a loss like that it makes a huge wave in your life. So immediately after that, I moved downtown into an apartment with my co-founders, and we've been working on Crescendo full-time since. So it's truly been a year of huge changes. And now we're about to move again. We're about to move to Montreal to be close to the AI community there. So it's just been, you know, entrepreneurship is a wild ride of change after change. But going back to your original question, which was like the deepest learning, there have been so many, but I think that the one that's been most pervasive through all of this has been that even in companies with great culture, you can still face discrimination.
Yeah.
When I was at Microsoft, I never thought that I would face discrimination. You know, I had seen it happen to other people elsewhere, and I've faced it elsewhere. And we had a great culture, and it was fantastic. But I realized when I finally faced it for myself that even in a company where everything is going well and you love your job and you have a great team and, you know, the company really does put in effort to make it a diverse and inclusive workplace, even there you can still get people who discriminate against you for one reason or another. And I hadn't faced it to that level of intensity before, but when I did, I realized how much it can affect your mental health. And looking back, you know, I'm glad that I went through it because it gave me a lot of empathy for the people that we're serving in the end with Crescendo. You know, it's informed a lot of the early stages of Crescendo's planning. And my co-founders and all and I have all left companies or had big company or not company, but like career changes because of bias that we faced at work. So it's a very real problem for us. And experiencing it myself made me really rethink, you know, my approaches as a manager. So it's completely changed the way that I deal with people at work, and I'm much more conscious of proactively creating inclusive workplaces and really trying to get ahead of anything. And I guess I saw a lot of the warning signs of what we're trying to target with Crescendo, which is that early unconscious bias, because you can really see it earlier on once you've seen it go from that unconscious bias or that earlier stage to full-on harassment.
Yeah, so it always needs maintenance in some way.
Yeah, exactly. That's such a good way to put it. It needs maintenance, and you need to be able to diagnose the problem early on in order to maintain it before it gets too big.
So you're moving to Montreal. When are you guys moving? When are you folks moving, I should say? I've tried to not use guys, and then it just comes out every once in a
while. Hey, nice catch. Good catch. Yeah, we're trying to cut out guys as well. I say the guys in reference to the guys on the team, but I'm trying to, like, limit it just to them now. I usually use folks or y'all or people or
I use y'all, too, and then I feel like every time I use it, people look at me like, where are you from?
Do you say y'all in Atlantic Canada?
Yeah.
That's too funny. The flowchart, it was about what should I say instead of you guys. And there was like a whole bunch of options. But the one that led to y'all was the final decision point was, are you or could you convincingly pretend to be from the South? And if yes, say y'all. If not, say folks.
I feel like I might have to stick with folks then. Anything you're looking forward to in particular about the Montreal AI scene?
Oh, it's just the best place to be right now for AI. I mean, with all of the research that's going on there and the incredible companies coming out of Montreal, just to be in the same vicinity as DeepMind and Maluba and, you know, Facebook's research lab and all of these incredible organizations doing mind-blowing machine learning work. It's a nerd's dream.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This has been a great conversation.
This has been so much fun. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Thanks so much for joining me for this conversation with Sage. I really learned a lot from this conversation, and I really learned a lot from re-listening to it as I edited a bit of it before sending it over to the folks that graciously helped me with the editing, as it's not really my skill. And if you're interested in interacting a bit with Sage, you can find her on LinkedIn or Twitter. Her Twitter handle is The Trendy Techie. That's T-E-C-H-I-E, at The Trendy Techie. I hope you learned something. I know I did. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And if you have any thoughts on the episode, I'd be really happy to hear them in the comments. Or if you wanted to rate the podcast on iTunes, we'd really appreciate that as well. Thanks so much for listening, and really looking forward to having you join us for episode 3.